Chris, would you come on?
You be the top.
We're sort of running on the only few people today. We don't have a teleconference operator nor a committee secretary, so if some of the committee members would volunteer for these duties, we'd help us out here. One person, but an expert on 404. This was bogged down. We sort of bogged down on it because it's just not clear what's the it's a mandated offering. We have to offer it as an option, a mandated option.
What are you hearing on that?
Small
business one?
Oh. Let's start the committee. Again, if you could join us and give us the just give Representative Parnell or any other members a chance to ask any questions you might have on it. This bill is a mandated option for dental, visual, and hearing.
That's correct.
I was here.
Oh. Any questions from any other committee members?
I think Representative Iden perhaps didn't get an opportunity yesterday.
Right.
Okay.
I think the rest were here, though.
Nixon wasn't here.
The issue before you is whether or not it would be appropriate to require insurers to offer this insurance to individuals as well as to groups for hearing, dental, and vision coverage. And this is an option for the policyholder of a major medical insurance policy to opt to purchase or not. And the reason that we have requested this bill is because in our investigations we found that hearing, dental, and vision insurance is not available in the state of Alaska to individuals. And in other states, it isn't available. And we feel that it would benefit people of all ages in the state to be able to take advantage of insurance such that they can anticipate and be responsible about their needs. And I pointed out earlier that only members of group insurance policies can get this kind of coverage, and those on Medicaid.
Any questions from any committee members? Thanks for that. If anyone else presently wants to testify, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Gordon Evans. I represent the Health Insurance Association of America, and I think by now you all know what that association is. We oppose Senate Bill 404 because it fosters adverse selection. People will buy this coverage only when they need it. And that may sound like not very much, but it is. It's a pricey offering that's to be made here. Many insurance carriers, health insurance carriers, do not sell this particular dental, vision, or hearing benefits. And this would force them to do that. And it would require them to go through the underwriting procedures and so forth in order to set that up. And there aren't that many people that it would affect, so that's going to make the prices even higher. So we just feel that you should not mandate that a company has to offer this. There, for instance, right now, as Dr. Thorne said, only in the state, only groups have to offer this coverage, and for the state employees, that's why they're using the state employees, retired state employees' benefits as the minimum benefits have to be offered, and they do that as an offering in that. However, the company that sells vision insurance, in that particular package is not in Alaska, and not a company that does business in Alaska. That's Vision Services, I believe is the name of it, and they also sell only to groups. So, and also, another problem we have, this is the sponsor had said in previous testimony that this bill would not be a standalone, or the policy, rather, would not be a standalone policy, that a person would already have to be a policyholder before the coverage would be offered. And it's true that the offer would have to be made to each policyholder or subscriber, which could be interpreted to mean that you already have to be taking the insurance before it's offered. But then what about new people that come on board? So in other words, you are going to have to do the underwriting, go through, and then thereafter sell it. Because you're going to, once you got it on your menu, so to speak, it's going to be there and you're going to have to offer it. So we feel that this bill has some problems that still needs to be worked out. There possibly is a way of working it out, but this bill does not solve the situation.
Thank you, Art Lee. It says they have to offer it to policyholders.
Yes.
It doesn't seem to me to indicate they have to offer it as a standalone.
No, I say that they say it would not be a standalone policy, that you have to offer it to policyholders. But then what that means is every time you sell a policy, that's it. What if the person comes in and only wants that coverage?
They're a policyholder, so you don't have to offer it to them. Well, they have to offer it to policyholders.
I see what you're saying, but they would
clearly
have to have...
It clearly gives you authorization to not sell it as a standalone. You only have to sell it to policyholders, so unless they're willing to be a policyholder, you don't sell it to them.
But if you, that's it. But if you don't offer that already, then you have to underwrite in order to have that offered then. If you don't offer health, if you only write a major medical, for instance, but not vision, dental, or audio, this will make the insurance company offer it.
Right. It's a mandated option.
Right.
No doubt about that. But it does mean you have to sell it to somebody who isn't a policyholder. You don't have to sell it alone.
No, I understand.
I was just a little confused on that. Now, in terms of the additional costs for the selection of this group and people coming in who are worse risks than everywhere else, doesn't that higher cost just go to this policy? I mean, the end result of that is higher costs for this option, right?
Yeah.
So we got a higher cost option, which means less people are going to select it. That's your concern, right?
You still have to go through the underwriting procedures and getting ready to offer it. You know, just in case somebody does want it. And I realize that's what's going to drive the cost up, too. And then the fact that so few people would be using it. In your package, you have a letter, I believe, from the Principal Financial Group, which is an insurance, one of the companies that does business in Alaska, saying that, telling what the problems they see in it if it's passed in Alaska, what it costs them.
But now, I'm just trying to follow those costs. There's additional costs because of the administrative hassle, because of this adverse selection. Those costs mean someone wants to come and pick this option. It's a more expensive option. As prices keep going up, less people are going to pick it because they're going to be priced out of the market and won't pick it. That's the problem, right?
Yes.
Okay, now, what's so bad about that? I mean, it means this is an option that less people are going to select. I'm not sure if that means there's any bad about it.
Well, I guess, Mr. Chairman, the only way I can answer that is the insurance companies always, and maybe sometimes justifiably from some people's views, are getting a rap because they're increased. The premiums are always high, going up high and higher and higher. And this is a good example of why we have higher premiums. It would result in higher premiums. And the fact that only certain people would take it, still, the fact that it is this one service or benefit that would have the higher premium, in effect, rubs off on the entire industry with every other cost they have.
Well, it seems to me there's two groups. There's the companies that already have this as an option. They're not affected because they're already making this an option. There's the companies that don't have it as an option, and they can't be accused of having higher priced insurance because it's not something they're offering anywhere. Their price didn't go up for this option. It didn't exist in the first place, so they come into the market at a high level for something that's a mandated option that, you know, has some self-selecting problems that make it a high group. It's almost a high-risk category. I mean, I just can't see any problem if the conclusion is that this is a higher-priced option because of what we're doing. I'm not sure that's any different than the intent behind this thing. It's to get that option out there. I didn't see any evidence that this, I'm not going to pick this as an option if I'm out there in the market. It doesn't seem to me I'll just put some money in a savings account because these kind of risks, dental, vision, etc., aren't what really worry me, major medical worries me. But for people who want to pay this high amount, it seems to me that's what the bill is all about.
Well, you know, I guess I can just say that somewhere along the line, these costs are going to have to be passed along to other people, not just the one who gets the policy. Because you do, as we indicated earlier, you have to write several policies in order, assuming maybe only one or two or three people are going to use the services that much to cover what's taken in. So there's going to be costs that's going to be passed on somewhere along the line. And that's where the insurance companies then get the bad rap for increasing premiums. I realized that it would do good for those who want it and those who can afford it. And from what I understand from Dr. Thorne, that's what their aim is, to give it to those who can afford it, who want it. So all I want to do is just put the insurance industry on record.
Okay, good. Well, I appreciate it. And I'm just asking questions because I don't really understand. Thank you, Gordon.
Thank you.
Anyone else want to testify on this? Harlan, please join us. We'll have to make everything very brief because we have one more bill we have to do.
I'm Harlan Nelson, living here in Juneau, speaking as an individual citizen. I'm also a small employer. There's only two in our office, so we can't get health insurance. The only way I have health insurance is my wife was employed by the state. She recently retired. My wife recently retired from the state.
Are you talking about Senate Bill 404?
Yeah, and I'm speaking in support of Senate Bill 404. Because when she retired, the federal law requires the state to offer us insurance for a year. When Aetna told us, yes, you can stay under the state employee program, but you cannot have dental, you cannot have vision, you cannot have hearing, I would have loved to have been able to buy those options. This bill just gives me the opportunity as an individual citizen to buy those options. If they want to put a high price on it, then I can make that choice. I think Senate Bill 404 is a good bill. I ask you to support it.
Thank you, Harlan. Anyone else present who wishes to testify? Is Mr. Gingold on the line, please?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I am.
Okay, if you can offer any brief comments then on any of the subjects, have you been able to hear what we were discussing?
I have been able to hear some of it, but not all of it.
The main question we have is, we've had testimony that there's going to be additional costs from this, and the question is, who pays those costs? It's only people who are selecting this option.
I believe that that's generally correct, but from what I've heard, I have a different view of some of the other comments. And if I might just preface my remarks by saying that we are very supportive of bills which can be implemented and expanded to fulfill a positive vision of health care reform. That's why we've supported Senate Bill 290, for example. On this particular one, though, I couldn't help, as I listened, to wonder what does this proposal do for people that they can't already do for themselves? And in particular, I've heard the comments about the adverse selection, the costs, and I agree with those comments. In response to the issue of what harm does it do, I think I can offer a few observations. First of all, I think it's important to keep in mind that by requiring this type of product to be offered to people who may or may not accept it and having it go to only those who immediately need it, you not only have a cost increase attributable to the adverse selection, you've got administrative costs. When the carriers have to redo their materials to include the offering, they also have to reprogram their information systems or computer systems to cover this. On the individual side, there would be underwriting. On the group side, there would not be. You would have a lot of differences that are not in the system now. Obviously, those direct administrative costs would be added on to the actual cost of the services, which would probably be pretty close to 100%. And you'd not only be in a position where you'd have direct and indirect costs on the administrative side, but you would be giving people an opportunity to buy something that would be more expensive than what they could individually get it for themselves. In other words, there are no networks, to my knowledge, in the state of Alaska among the provider disciplines in these three areas that are offering any kind of significant discounts. There are none, to my knowledge, that are doing anything in the area of cost containment. The overall effect of requiring people to make a choice when they need it through more directly from consumers to those disciplines. And what it would do to the carriers, frankly, I mean, if the state wants us to do it, then obviously we will do it. But it really strikes me as being against the flow of reform, if you will, to require those people who need it to then pick up an administrative expense that they really don't need to pay for, and that the carriers don't need to spread indirectly to other groups. So overall, actually, I think that it will not do any more good for those people, even those who can't afford it, than they can by just getting up and going to those three provider types. But there are, and I have some suggestions on how you might work it if you still feel that it's appropriate to do that, but I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have on what I've just presented.
If you could go into the suggestions you have as quickly as possible, we'd appreciate it.
Yes, sir. First of all, I think we recognize that dealing with the individual option is a much tougher fix than dealing with the group side, because we already have situations where dental and vision are being offered. Blue Cross, as you know, is not involved in the state program, so it would be a tough thing for us to try to hook off of a program that we don't currently get involved in. But if you were to handle these three disciplines the same way that dental and vision are group offerings, requiring the entire group to accept these options or reject them, so you didn't have to go one by one to each employee, that adds administrative cost. Also, if you had all three of them, dental, vision, and hearing, being required at that time, then you would diminish a lot of the impact of adverse selection, so that people who had hearing problems immediately might not otherwise want the dental and vision, et cetera. But if you require all three to go to the entire group, you can probably get the costs down pretty well.
Yep.
Also, in terms of the lack of any kind of discount to keep that wallet-to-wallet transfer from really impacting people, I think it would be real helpful if we could bring together these provider disciplines to come to the table and talk to us about what would make sense to them in the way of cost containment that they could live with and make the program more affordable to more people. If you could do that on the group side, it might work, and it might be something that we could keep an eye on for a couple of years and see if it needed to be tuned. That would give us an opportunity to try to figure out how we could do something on the individual side where you don't have the option of getting an entire group to buy in or buy out of all three of these options. That would leave you really with very long waiting periods, continuous coverage requirements, so that they didn't load up in one short period of time all of the benefits that they hadn't had for many years, and might require some staggered benefits as well, which are quite a bit more complicated in terms of computer programming, administration, et cetera. So overall, what I'm suggesting is that you break out the group offering from the individual, consider putting off the individual one and making these linked group offerings so that it's all or none, and bring the providers to the table and see if they can help us make this a more cost-effective program.
Hey Jeff, it seems that the main argument you've got against this is the complaint that these people have to, they're going to end up having to pick up the administrative costs.
Somebody's going to have to pick it up, and it's going to be a lot, and they're getting nothing in return for that. Nothing at all. They're getting no discounts. They're getting nothing they can't get by walking into these offices without any additional legislation.
The problem we have is that we have a testimony yesterday that this option is not widely available, and that there are many people, especially older people, who have not been able to get it. So the concern is sort of secondary, that they're going to have to pick up administrative costs. These folks, from the record, are unable to pick up, aren't unable to get the coverage at all.
Right, and I understand that, and what I'm trying to articulate is that if they can't get the coverage now, means they can't pay for the service if they walk into the office without coverage. Premium for this is going to be identical to 100% of the cost of walking into the office without coverage, plus it's going to be loaded up with the administrative costs on top of that. So it would be
I guess you have to explain a little further. What do they have today? If I'm a senior and I can't get this coverage, period, how is it worse than that?
Okay. You can't get the coverage today because the provider disciplines are not, you don't have any networks out there for these types of coverage. You don't have any discounts or cost containment vehicles that would reduce the cost below a fee-for-service level. The fee-for-service level, as you know, is the rate that anybody walking in off the street with or without coverage would pay. So apart from the fact that they can't get insurance to pay for it, the fact of the matter would be that they would have to pay 100% or fee-for-service rate for the coverage if it were required. And the difference is that if they walked in the door today and said, I need a hearing aid or I need this vision coverage, and they paid 100% of the bill for that, they at least wouldn't get tagged with the administrative cost on top of that.
Well, I do share your view and that point of view. I you know, as I said, I wouldn't pick this coverage, but I'm still not sure why, you know, this coverage we're talking about here, which is just directly paying coverage you're talking about, no great discount, no advantage, why that's worse than no option to pick anything.
It's more expensive is what I'm saying.
You're saying if they pay the
cost of the coverage.
Right. The difference, of course, is that they pay, you know, monthly or half yearly, and over time their costs come in every few years, so it's sort of like a savings plan or something. But okay, I find your comments really helpful. They help clarify my thoughts. And is there any questions from any other committee members? Okay, thank you very much, Jeff. I really appreciate your taking the time to join us. This is a tough subject for us in these final days, and your testimony has been very helpful.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to join you by phone today. Are you going to be discussing 242?
Sure, we'll keep you on, but we may or may not be able to have any testimony from you on that one. So thank you for joining us.
Welcome. Thank you.
Let's go now. Thank you, Ned.
Okay.
We're not taking more testimony. So,
1 minute.
If we could go now, we'll come back to 404. If we could start while we don't have a quorum on 242, Senator Collins, if you can join us. You can use your mic.
Let's turn up. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Senate Bill 242 has a companion piece in the House. The Senate Bill, House Bill 537, Representative Davis has the bill. We've been working together. Basically, Senate Bill...
Actually, Senator Collins, I really hate to interrupt you, but if you'd indulge me, let me go back to the bill. Now we have Representative Parnell here.
Oh, that's great. No
problem. Our attention span is such that we might lose our ability to follow out. You're welcome to join us. So we have before us Senate Bill 404. I don't know the answer. Does any committee members under discussion want to offer any thoughts on this legislation? I'm very confused by it. I'd like to move a 5-year sunset provision on legislation. I'm not convinced if this is good for the consumer or bad for the consumer. Some of it reminds me of the plan we had on annuities for longevity bonus, where, you know, it clearly was an option. It might help people to save besides some money, but it was worse than the options available in the private market, so it was hard to justify offering a state annuity. This strikes me the same way, but it seems to me there's a demand, and I don't have any greater insight than that. Any other committee members have any thoughts? Any discussion on a 5-year sunset? Expedite things. I'll move the 5-year sunset. Is there discussion or objections?
Just a question. What is the deletion down here in brackets of 2142.385?
What this does is, yeah, these are all just, it's just a sunset provision. I'd be glad to have Catherine explain it if you want. But Section 4 says that these are repealed, then Section 5 says Section 3 and 4 take effect in 1998, so then 3 and 4 go back into effect. So they're existing provisions.
Right. The 385 that's being deleted is created by the bill, So if the bill sun, if the provisions of the bill sunset, we no longer need to have that
see,
reference.
I see.
It's
sure.
Just a conformity.
Sure. Sure. Thank you very much, Kevin.
Any further discussion? Any objections to the sunset? I hear no objections to the sunset adopted. Further discussion on legislation. What's the wish of the committee? Okay, is there objection? I hear no objection. Bill is moved out.
I understand it's no problem. I understand how difficult it is to get quorum these days. But back to Senate Bill 242. It is a bill that allows pooling for small employers for the purposes of obtaining coverage for their employees. It guarantees that coverage is available to small employers. There's a renewability coverage. Individuals in an employer group and employer groups themselves would be assured at the time of renewal that their coverage would not be canceled because of deteriorating health. It creates a continuity of coverage. Once an individual is qualified under the plan, if they transfer employers, they would be able to continue their coverage. There's a predictability in the sense that there's a premium pricing limit that the insurance companies, if they had to increase their premiums, there'd be a limit to the percentage that they could increase their premiums. So it gives kind of some stability and some predictability to the small market. The bill has a zero fiscal note. There is no cost to the state with respect to this bill. That's probably the greatest difference between this bill and I believe Senate Bill 74, which has passed this committee, which is a state plan. This is a private issue. It has no fiscal impact to the state of Alaska, and it's essentially a health care access bill. And with that, I'll just answer any questions that you might have specifically on the legislation.
Mr. Chairman.
I went in co-sponsorship on the House side of the same bill, but through the material I've looked at, I haven't seen what like projected cost would be per month for a user. Did we ever work that out?
It's hard to say what the projected cost is going to be, because you really don't know what it's going to be because the experience has never happened. What we've done in the bill in order to make sure that it's appropriate is that the premiums that would be sold under the law established by Senate Bill 242 would have to comply with current state law. And in current state law, there's a statement that says the premium has to be worth the program. So that there's that constraint there. The other constraint that we have is that the plan, once it is put together and it's all priced and everything, has to be approved by the Division of Insurance. If it's not approved by the Division of Insurance because it's too expensive and it isn't appropriate, it will not go forward. So there are several mechanisms in the bill that would make sure that the cost certainly would be reasonable, because if it is not, then the insurance Division of Insurance has the authority to not accept the plan, and then the plan doesn't go forward.
The reason I chaired the committee at the Anchorage Chamber a few years back, and we finally put one of these plans into the hands of the members to make this kind of insurance available. And the premiums are so expensive that they just bagged out. They just said, it's not worth it, we can't afford it. Mm-hmm. So very few, if any, were Bill Perry could handle that, but Perry could not. And they had a few, but it was quite odd to us that after all the effort and interest that people expressed in participating, they wouldn't participate once they found out on the premiums per month. And I just wondered whether you had a handle on that. Mm-hmm.
Well, as I said, I am aware of that. As you are aware, the Chamber of Commerce supports this piece of legislation because of their experience from their previous efforts. The thing that you have to keep in mind is that the group that will be covered is not necessarily a high-risk group. The reason that insurance is generally not available to small employers is because the administrative costs are so high to handle a plan for 25 people. But if you're handling larger numbers of people, then that administrative costs go down. You spread the risk a little bit, and the sense that we have is that the premiums obviously would be reasonable. But the biggest thing I think in the bill that ensures that the premium is going to be reasonable is the fact that the bill, although it mandates that the insurance companies make the insurance available, that they admit people into the plan, and that they accept the limit on their premium increases. There are a lot of constraints on the insurance industry, but there is no mandate that the small employer buy the insurance. So the reality is, in order for the insurance companies to be able to make it work, they're going to have to offer a premium at a reasonable cost, or nobody's going to buy it.
That's right.
And if people don't buy it, then they've had to spend all this money to set up the authority. They will have had to spend all of this money to put all of these, this mechanism in place, and they'll not, recover their expenses. So it's in everybody's best interest that the premium be reasonably priced and that it be a reasonable premium. So I think there are enough, there's a combination of different things in the bill and the way it's put in place that I think would ensure that the premiums would at least be reasonable.
It's just the heart of whether it's going to work or not.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, nobody really knows if it's going to work or not, and the thing that I feel about this bill is that it gives us an opportunity to go out there and provide at least some health care coverage access for working people who I think are the most...
left out.
Well, they're most left out, and they're the greatest, at greatest risk, because if you're working and you have a job and you have a serious illness in your family and you don't have coverage, then you can't go on Medicare, Medicaid in order to cover your family member or to cover those costs of that illness. What you have to do is you either have to sell everything you've got and go on welfare in order to be able to cover the cost. So what this does is gives people who are, at the highest risk, an opportunity to have some insurance coverage. And nobody knows how it's going to work, but the reality is we have a 4-year sunset date on the bill. At the beginning, before anything goes forward, it has to be approved by the Division of Insurance. And even if it doesn't work, the state is not out any money because there's no fiscal expense to the state. And if anybody loses under this, it's going to be the insurance company.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hill. I really applaud the effort. I think it's a very fine one. My concern is something we just discussed, and that is that the industry, I believe, has for many, many years succeeded very well in fabricating an administrative bugaboo. It does not exist. The only thing that exists is, are you going to get the check or not? Mm-hmm. Somebody going to pay you. That's what really exists as far as administrative cost is concerned. Because if you take it across the board, 5,000 people working for, let's say, 1,000 employers, 5 employees apiece. Those 5,000 people aren't going to get any more sick, have any more babies, have any more teeth problems than 5,000 people working for the state of Alaska. Yet they can certainly come up with numbers, no problem at all. Why do they come up with those numbers? Because they have to bid to get our coverage. Interestingly, they're willing to go out and they get real hungry when it comes to that coverage. They're willing to get in and fight for it. But when it comes to us little employers out here in the world, we just flat get screwed, and we do every time by an insurance agent that sits there and says, oh, I just can't find any carrier that'll write for anybody smaller than 25 people. But then I can get you down to a 10-person group, and the Chamber of Commerce has a thing that if, and you start looking at the numbers, and you're paying 3 and 4 times what the state is paying. And you go, hey, wait a minute. I know there's got to be another 1,000, 2,000 people stuck just like I am. Why can't we get the same kind of coverage? And of course, we try to come in and say, hey, why can't we just come onto the state's policy like Duncan has suggested? Oh, my God, you'd think the world was going to fall in, Any, they're going to get any sicker? No. Do they have any actuarial studies that indicate any of this? No. My only frustration is the bill's as long as it is. I think the thing ought to be about 1 page long. It ought to say that the state is hereby mandating that any time people come through the door to you, little Mr. Independent Insurance Agent, because they always want to get their 17% to 25% ripoff, off every premium goes to them because they handle the paper. But every one of them ought to have to sit there and they ought to have to keep track with a fish counter or something. As soon as 10 people have come through the door requesting the coverage, they're mandated they have to write the folks' names down, and that just became a group. That group has to bring in one check each month or one check every 4 months. That takes care of the administrative cost on those guys. And guess what? Now there are 10 people in that bunch. You know something? I've made this statement several times in the past. I've never had anybody from the insurance industry come forward and tell me how come I'm wrong on that one. So I want to move this bill with individual recs and get it to the floor as quickly as possible.
Second.
A little premature, we haven't finished public testimony. Thank you.
Wave public testimony.
My friend over at the board has probably got a complaint.
They don't want testimony.
We already like, would you like to join us?
We already have yours.
Supports it.
Well, good.
We don't want
to? Come on, please. Reese, would you like to join us? Do you have any testimony you'd like to offer?
We support the bill.
Good.
If anyone else president wants to testify on this legislation?
You didn't identify.
Well, that was Reese's drill for the record.
Gordon says his company supports the bill, too.
Okay. Do you want, would you like to testify?
I would just, Mr. Chairman, I'll just get the same statement. This is a bill that my company, or my association has been working on, and with Senator Collins, and we do heartily support it.
Anyone else want to testify?
I know why it's 25 pages long.
This is Reed Stoops representing. Yeah, now, there should be a letter in the committee's packet with that in the support as well.
Okay. Any further testimony? Any discussion with the committee? Motion has been made by Representative Taylor Moodfield with independent recommendation. Is there any objection? Hearing no objection, so moved.
Thank you.
Probably our last meeting, guys.
Mr. Chairman, I want to say on behalf of the minority members of this committee that I think you did a fine job for 2 years. You were patient, and I appreciate it very much.
Well, I appreciate your help on things. We got through some tough subjects.
I'm going to put a no record on it. Yeah, I'm still going to think about it.
Okay. I like it. That won't show on the thing.
You know, it's interesting, the number of people coming in, so you get more visitors.
I know.
You get a bunch of groups on that one, and you get a bunch of groups, and that's why it's good.
Just an instrument. I need those numbers anyway. I need to.